I think any moderator would be envious of the kinds of people we have on the stage, the talent, the diversity, and how they complement each other. I am privileged to have all of you gentlemen. Thank you for being with us this morning. I know they're all very anxious to hear from you, but I request you to, and we can start with Eric on my immediate right, to introduce himself and maybe focus very briefly on a challenge that he's engaged in that will hopefully begin to transform, continue to transform the industry we are a part of. Mr. Eric Iverson.
Well, good morning, everybody. How are you doing today? Good, good, good. Eric Iverson, if you haven't met me before, I'm now the CIO over at CAA, Creative Artists Agency. Thank you. Some of the gang over here doing a fabulous job. I'm on day 12. I'm not there today, so I guess I'm still officially on day 11 over there, soon to be day 12 later this afternoon. It's great getting over there because the teams are doing an unbelievable job getting a chance to walk in and seeing some things with a fresh eye is a really fascinating thing. And I think one of the things that, from a challenges point of view, other than learning my job, is the interesting juxtaposition of working at a studio for a long time and then going to see kind of further upstream in the process, instead of being kind of movie title product centric, being the people centric part of that equation. And I think that's going to be a really interesting topic for us for a long time. Learning the challenges there, certainly there are going to be things we're going to talk about with everybody today in terms of analytics and all those other things, but I'll let that play out as the panel continues. So,
thank you. Hello, everyone. I'm John Koscheka from 20th Century Fox. I'm EVP for Enterprise Operations. Enterprise Operations is an organization that we created about 5 years ago, and it was an idea of, in this emerging digital environment that we're all operating in, that we would bring all of our distribution teams together in one group to handle the distribution of content across all media. As part of that, I now report to John Herbert, who is our CIO, which is an interesting thing in its own right from the standpoint that now, you know, information technology leaders are becoming very embedded within the totality of our organization, which is a great thing for us. Separate and apart from that, things that I was involved with in the past at Fox included being a key player in our digital delivery initiative, developing a site, a B2B site called FoxFast, and delivering content to all of our worldwide programming partners. And in the current, I guess, challenges that we're encountering, I think when we created Enterprise Operations, we thought about really three key areas that we wanted to focus on as an organization. And it was customer service, it was mastering, and it was localization. The thing I think we missed in terms of creating that organization was the fact that there were other areas that we needed to focus on, which included communications, analytics, strategy, business partnership. And this is one of the challenges that I'm involved with right now, because I'm taking on a new task at Fox, working with John Herbert to create a new internal group that is designed around basically these things and innovation in support and connection with our media supply chain. So it's a big change for the future and something that's very exciting in this new environment. Thank you.
Hello, everyone. My name is Sean Flynn. I'm currently a technology and security consultant, but just a couple months ago, I was the CTO for Marvel Studios for just about 8 years. So prior to that, I was with Kelly Productions, and that was another 8-year stint. But the bottom line is content creation is where I've spent the majority of my career. And so things that I'm looking at currently that are of interest to me are the migration of pre-release workflows on theatrical and live action projects in the efforts directed towards efficiency, speed to deploy, flexibility, the ability to take best-of-breed technologies that are popular in different locations around the world and accommodate them in a fashion similar to what we used to deliver on-premise. and still maintain the same level of security and control and visibility on the content that that system would handle.
Cool. So I'm Elliot Sokratov. I am the account technology strategist for media and entertainment here in LA from Microsoft. Spent the past 20 years working in media and entertainment, NBCU, which I know a lot of you guys from. Was over at Shine, which was TARDA 21CF, and then eventually went to Funny or Die, where I ran a number of different IT organizations and different products. The thing that we're Microsoft's concentrated on as far as transformation is the digital transformation of the business in and of itself, our business. Microsoft went from a traditional CPG business, in a sense, to digitally transforming to a new age. What we're really focused in on is assisting and propping up and helping our customers with their own digital transformations by providing them tools, assets, workflows, everything that they need in order to do their own digital transformation. And the idea is that we want to come out of IT and really help the business along with their digital transformation as well.
So while we continue this conversation, I want you to come up with the questions that you want to ask them. But this is a rare occasion. I think even Charlie Rose would say that. This is a rare occasion. So bring it on. Bring it on. Bring it on. So it would not be a marvel if I said to the community here that storytelling has been our business in Hollywood. That's what we've done for over a century. So the question I have for you gentlemen is, how has that storytelling and the delivery of story content to consumers been affected in this digital world we live in? So please, John, go ahead.
Well, coming from Fox, I think that the fact that we are first and foremost a storytelling company that, you know, is trying to create compelling product to put out into the marketplace, it's the speed at which content now needs to be into the marketplace and the demand that consumers now have and the expectation, quite frankly, that they now have. The expectation of wanting things when they want it 24/7, 365 has completely caused us to rethink our organization and the structure of our organization. And that, you know, quite frankly, is what's leading to the change that we're involved with from the standpoint of looking at the totality of the organization, you know, coming from the standpoint that we used to be very US-centric in content distribution. Now we've had to look at the footprint of our IT, of our operational staff around the globe, so that we can support that 24/7, 365 concept.
Yeah, just adding to that, the first thing I would say is from my previous experience, I would say that it's interesting that the speed and the expectations are all seemingly feeding on each other, right? So we get it out there a little bit faster. That's fantastic. And then the clients of the studios want more of that turning around faster. But it's also important to do that keeping up with how consumers might get the content otherwise, right?
I'm sorry. I would say that, too, there is a kind of a double-edged sword and a danger from the standpoint that, you know, we want to preserve the quality of the content that we're putting into the marketplace. We have these impossible, you know, timing demands, and how do you get that balance where you have the highest quality content and still getting out there on the consumer's expectations?
Absolutely. And so certainly I think that I think the projects in, you know, Elliot, you might talk about what Azure is doing, but I think the cloud-based projects are helping a lot with that because that actually really helps accelerate, I think, some of the compute problem of that and be able to move that forward a little faster. But I do think that the other thing I saw getting introduced very quickly into the marketplace along with that is still other things that need to be done. So if all of a sudden you have something that's day and date and you have a lot of different languages it may need to get mastered into, that's a lot of additional work that has to happen. That's not magic. That technology isn't going to just solve that problem for you today. So that's moving that forward pretty quickly.
Elliot, who said earlier that he has been providing services to M&E, any response, Elliot?
Yeah, I think that it's not only a distribution issue. I think a lot of the answers lie in data-driven in technology. So as BuzzFeeds of the world come up, you see that the storytelling is really based upon what the audience wants, and it's really become more audience-centric to that perspective. You're segmenting your audiences, you're guiding your viewpoint, you're guiding to some degree your narrative to what the audience themselves want in order to garner that interaction and that next step that you guys want.
I agree pretty much with everything you guys covered. I would say on the content creation side, what it's done for us is we have to be very mindful of what we're going to deliver for the different efforts that we're feeding. So whether it's VR and the storytelling that's beginning there, or something as simple as, you know, thinking about what asset management, physical asset management should be today and how we can rethink that to help drive value in something like a VR effort or something like, you know, content, whether it's going to be OTT, VOD, or in the theaters. Digitizing it allows us to feed multiple pipelines at one time, and it can be something as simple as taking an asset, say a hero prop, and doing a 3D scan, a texture map, a tone map, so that we can deliver then that digital representation to a licensee. So you've got merchandising, marketing, you can deliver that to a team developing a game, our VR folks that are starting to fill the different floors of many studios around town. So I guess parallel planning.
Yeah, the one thing I also would like to add exactly to that point is we've always traditionally been talking in terms of storytelling. And I would say today, and I will make this argument, that from today forward, we should talk in terms of storytelling and experiences. Because I would argue that VR is an experience part. I think if you look at what millennials are asking for, they're looking for experiences just as much. And I think what you see in the holistic view of what an entertainment experience is for the consumers coming through, it's the storytelling and experiences that they're looking for.
Thank you so much. I think the two words have to go hand in hand, this telling, storytelling and experience. And I can go back to Dr. Hal Varian, who's the chief economist of Google. His whole book centers on the idea that this product of Hollywood is actually an experience product. He makes a point of that.
Well, so, I just read it before I had came out here.
Hal Varian says that, and he's been here two years ago, but thank you for helping me and helping the community think along those lines, because that gets back to the point Sean was making about delivering it to the consumer 7x24 globally, every device, everywhere, anytime.
And I think Elliot, the experiences are adding to that. That's why I think it's interesting. So your question about technology and the storytelling, it's also driving experiences, which I think is very interesting too. And that's has at the same speed. Unfortunately, we set the expectation with the storytelling speed, and now we have the same problem kind of catching up on the experience side, but a little less runway. By the way, I had a good experience with Fox Fast.
Oh,
nice
good.
Job. Yeah.
So it works.
So I wanted to pick up on a thought you were suggesting, Eric, earlier. The impression I get, agility is the demand of the day. Making content available on any device anywhere in the world is the norm, as opposed to when I was growing up, movies in India, American movies, came 2-3 years later, and the film would be all shot and would not even run through the projectors when they came to India. But now they're watching our TV shows and movies, same time you and I are watching in our bedrooms. So the cloud is obviously a big enabler in all this. That's the impression I'm getting, learning from all of you. What are the impediments from a production end, more from a production end, that are preventing us from utilizing the cloud as effectively as it could be?
And depreciation. Maybe if I could pick on depreciation. I think.
What's that? appreciation.
Okay, but in all seriousness, I'll shut up in a second.
Okay.
But actually, just investment in current equipment. If you look at productions, I find most productions run very, very frugal. A lot of them do, and they have investments out there. So I think we're just in one aspect is we're in a cycle of retooling, and you're not gonna go run out and buy equipment just because the cloud does it better today when you have a zero cost sitting there. So that's one, but that's a true statement.
Got it.
Well, I was, first of all, just going to make a comment that when I first started in the industry, I was working for a small independent film company, And we used to get these requests for urgent broadcasts that would be happening around the globe, and we'd get basically letters. So in the mail, we'd get a letter that we have an urgent broadcast. It's airing in 18 months, so can you please start the process? And it just goes to show how much, you know, all of this has changed in 20 years. And I'm being a little sarcastic, but not much. But everything's changed so much in the past 20 years. And I think probably the biggest challenge that we have in considering that question is the fact that it's the complete buy-in. It's the complete understanding as to what we're trying to accomplish as an industry, and realizing that everyone is going to need to play some role in the supply chain and the value chain, whether it's in pre-production, whether it's in post-production, or whether it's in distribution. You know, we were talking about kind of the evolution of the distribution process, and, you know, with the time for 24/7, 365 distribution, every point at which you can capture, you know, and eliminate any time inefficiencies is a benefit to how we're going to be successful in distributing content. So if that means that you have to start a metadata tagging process in the pre-production stage, so all of that data feeds across the pipeline, that's an advantage in terms of accelerating the distribution and this whole process here.
And from our perspective, there's nothing stopping the entire production moving up to the cloud.
Not even depreciation. They are now paying for everyone's depreciation.
Thank you very much. I think we have to get everybody on the same page, though, and agree to it.
Well, so we're working with the MPA, the CDSA, like all those things have actually gone through our cloud. Like we have end-to-end distribution. The scariest thing is black to air, and really is the bird in the sky, is that your failure point? That's, you know, we have multiple routes. I mean, how far do you want to go down the path to where you don't get black to air? All of that's thought through, all of that's built in. It's just a matter of getting people to utilize and use it.
So I'm going to agree and disagree just slightly. On the content creation side, I think we, the content creators, were the biggest impediment because we weren't aggressive enough with publishing internal security frameworks and getting buy-in and sign-off on the risk that we felt might be present in the cloud. No, think that cloud companies such as yourself have done a fantastic job, especially started going 2 years back with really giving us the controls we were asking for. They're there, and we had to catch up and kind of do some control and domain control mapping and get some executive sign-off on what the risk of today was. But that said, I think the areas where I've seen concern in some of my customers and my own concern when I was with prior studios, you can't have an outage event. And so what I'm excited about is we won't succeed with the speed that we're being asked to create content and the speed we're being asked to stand up production without cloud. It's just not going to happen. So I get very excited at seeing what's possible. I also get very excited in that the two pieces I felt were a little bit absent was available connectivity that was affordable, high speed. That's come and changed. The cost is coming down. It's a little bit more ubiquitous. So if you're fortunate enough to have a production that's based in a major metropolitan area, you can usually solve that requirement and get two high-speed diverse connections and feel pretty comfortable. But even with that, if you're on a major tentpole project and you've got a couple hundred million on the line, you still want hot data accessible. So caching of hot data was also a big concern for us, and we're seeing devices out there now that allow for that. So I believe the pieces are finally here that I would wanted, and it's one of the reasons why I started off with what I said to you folks at the beginning, that moving pre-release workflows is a huge area of interest now, because I think those pieces are there.
If I can just jump in, because Elliot, I don't disagree. I feel like there's nothing technology can't allow us to do at this point. But, you know, for Fox here, we have 2,000 customers worldwide. We're distributing in 194 territories. We've got 64 different languages that we're localizing content in. And on top of that, we're supporting 14 different media type. There's only so much that all of us in this room can do to kind of push the ball forward in terms of using brute force or whatever efforts to get content out into the marketplace. We as an industry have to kind of rally together from, you know, the initial pre-production and talent, you know, start of the process to understand that we're all in this together and there's value for all of us together. if we're aligned in a common mission in terms of what we're trying to accomplish.
Yeah, totally. And you know, Microsoft has done a large amount of investment, especially in the security space, to make sure that everybody's comfortable and we feel that we are providing the best services we can. We've gone through an NPA audit we've passed. We've gone through CDSA. You know, we're going through independent audits with security advisors for each independent studio to make sure that our pen test is up to snuff. You know, three-letter agencies are flocking to our cloud. IBM's using our Glove Cloud. You know, there's the data is secure, and your ability to distribute from that data points are available. And to your point, yes, you know, your major issue is getting the content into the cloud so that you can manipulate it. Once it's in the cloud, once we have it in our ecosystem, delivery, editorial, whatever it is you want to do, all those tools are available today and ready to rock.
But Elliot, needs to adopt. I appreciate that you made a call out to the three-letter agencies. Thank you. You know, one thing I thought might be useful, just taking a second, just for if there's folks in the audience that maybe haven't spent as much time on the production side, is actually when we say, because I agree, I think we'd be kind of fairly like-minded that we're kind of about there. Maybe we just even elaborate just a second on it, because I could throw out, like, we had a good pre-talk, but I mean, I think over the last 3 years, when it came to certain things that we were still trying to do and we're almost ready to do it, I know one of the things that we had struggled with, which is it seems easy, but kind of that two monitor with a keyboard, you know, NLE editing was like almost there, but it still had some quirky things, and there were still some audio sync problems. And I think we're just about there. I think the next 12 months, whether you think they're there at this moment or not, we're going to surpass that, I think, you know, with the network and a few other things happening on. What are some of the other things that you feel like problem solved? And because I know that was one for me when we talked previously.
Well, even that one I've seen working, so I've seen 4K uncompressed. All the cloud. Some of the issues that you have are access to high speed storage, so you can have multiple editors on one project. That's still an issue that we're working to solve as well. You know, beyond that, I'm hard pressed to think of other than getting users to adopt, getting a major studio like Fox to adopt and get that up and running. I think that's really the next key step.
So I think there's some workflows that just logistically can't. If you're on set and you've got a shoot going and you're doing mocap, there's a massive amount of data that we're acquiring at just incredible speeds, and we won't be able to push that real-time to the cloud. Again, caching comes in for there. I agree with your statement about user adoption. Our editors at many of the places I've serviced and been a part of are very particular about what platform they work on, and some play very well in it with cloud. Like live broadcast has been very premiere-centric and doing great things with it. Not the same on the theatrical side, so I agree with that. But you know, those are solvable. Those are, again, within the control of the studios and the content creating production entities. I would second your video concern, but again, it's solution specific.
I wanted to particularly exploit the opportunity I have at this moment. You know, over the last 5 years, we have reached out to the studios, service providers, technology enablers, and others. We have really not embraced the talent part of our business to have creative artists. Representation on this panel brings this dimension that we've never had before. I would really call upon you, Eric, to, I know you've only been there for 12 days, but by now you know where the bathroom is, where the parking is. What do you see the value that HITS can bring in terms of this larger ecosystem that you have helped enlarge?
Yeah, sure. Great question that we prepped.
No, this is all unscripted.
You know, it's the first 11 and counting days has been fascinating because coming from a studio, the studios love talent too. When you move to the upstream in the towards the agency work and to the people side work, it's just a different view on what's happening in entertainment. It's been a real eye-opener for me, and seeing the problems through the artist's eyes a little bit more than looking to see the artist through the product or title eyes. It's not exactly that way. But
anyway, these are Riley's memories, and they're mostly happy, you'll know.
For us as an industry to understand if we could bring those two things together. And there's a lot of problems that I might say, and we'll use this as an example. It hits as Mesa and others have put a lot of effort to try to get like unique identifiers in for title so we could describe title and programs and digital workflows and whatnot. But as much as we've talked about it, there's not still really been any effort to do anything around kind of talent identification or whatnot. That data is living in metadata alongside the product is kind of a sidecar. But when you're kind of talking about the storytellers as a part of the storytelling and their experiences, I think there's a lot of opportunity there. And I do believe in my whopping 11th day that there is a big opportunity for the whole industry as a healthy industry. And I agree with you wholeheartedly on the importance of collaboration and us kind of working together to have a happy, healthy media and entertainment industry that that the talent gets the love as well. Not that they're not, but that there's a lot of work that we can do to help them, and I think that if we can pull that data together, I think there's a lot of win in that for everybody. Because certainly a studio has benefited from talent having a strong voice,
right.
Because that means more people are going to go see the product, and vice versa, right? The talent certainly want to see the products that they're in succeed.
So that was
that's kind of my take on it.
So that was a Hillary Clinton
we'll see,
moment.
Does anybody at that table over there agree? Like,
was that a Hillary Clinton moment of being prepared? Thank you. If I may ask the audience a question.
Sure.
Eric was with us. We launched the whole Universal Media ID project many years ago. How many in the audience would want to participate in an initiative to focus on talent ID? Would you raise your hands?
Thank you. Thank you very much. Just enough. Okay. There's enough there for a dinner with drinks, I think.
So we should have dinner and drinks.
Dinner and drinks, that's right.
Sponsored by CAA.
Marty, I think.
Thank you.
And also
sorry,
on
John, you had some thoughts.
I was just going to comment in regard to talent and the fact that, you know, when we talk about the expanding 24/7, 365 universe that we all now live in, we have had examples at Fox where, and looking specifically on the television side, where we get great success in global distribution when talent is part of the process, when they understand exactly what we're trying to accomplish. And I speak specifically in regard to all of this accelerated day and date distribution and the fact that, you know, we're not just a business that is about the US anymore. We're a global organization, and this is what our consumers are now expecting and demanding, is getting content into the marketplace. And you touched upon it, Eric, about the fact that it's the localized content as well. And if we keep our production schedules kind of oriented to a U.S. market, if talent doesn't understand what we're trying to do as an industry, I think we're going to limit a lot of opportunities in terms of getting content out into the marketplace on some accelerated basis. And the big thing, you know, when we're going into you know, Germany, France, Italy, these non-English speaking dub markets, you need greater lead times to get that product developed and localized. And then you have the balance of how do you maintain the creative integrity of that content at the same time. You know, so it's an interesting evolution that we all have to kind of focus on for the future. But that's where I think talent is going to play a role in this evolution going forward.
Yeah, no question. I could tell a real-life story from a previous experience I had, but there was a lot of analytic work that was done on an OTT service, and they noticed that a particular talent was that was third or fourth down the list was actually well-known in a particular country and territory. They changed out the box art for that and had a 300% increase on the amount of traction that the title has. So the fact that there is this relationship and it's global is absolutely true. And that's, you know, the people that are looking after the talent may have a new viewpoint into that, but we all have a vested interest in it doing well, right?
Yeah, it seems like this is all data-driven decisions, right? So you have all this data, which territories, which particular actor does well in, or, you know, the question is when do the studios start to listen to that? rather than, you know, the sort of the finger in the air to making the decision, like, oh, which way is the wind blowing today? That's really the watershed moment for those types of decisions. We know that Netflix is doing that today, coming to CAA and coming to ICM and saying, oh, we want that actor, not pitch us some guy. So those decisions are being made by those platforms. When does that become mass? And then that helps you guys make your decisions as far as your distribution models, which localization, which territories, things of that nature.
I would break that out and say they've done it by property, but they haven't come up with a richer set of data points. So to your point, talent, character, and really breaking it out, and then...
Great point.
I think that's analytics. A great point because great we point. Also have to demonstrate what the value is coming out of getting content into the marketplace much sooner. And many of us can argue it's, you know, counteracting piracy, it's counteracting social media and the fact that, you know, you've got the scene spoiler for the last episode of whatever program is airing on the U.S. network that's getting out into the marketplace. Suddenly folks aren't going to want to watch that content. So if we can do a better job of feeding that data back into the, you know, the talent pools and helping them to understand what the value is here, it's definitely in all of our interest.
I know you've been holding back your questions. Please, who is first?
No pressure.
Microphone. Pressure right there we go. I could keep them here all afternoon, but it's your turn.
Sure. I was really interested in the comment about how the business used to be U.S.-based and now it's global-based, and also your comment about speed to market and getting into, you know, international audiences the same time as U.S. audiences. So how does that affect really a tentpole business where you're trying to make a film, let's say, for a mass audience, but it used to be a mass U.S. audience, now it's a mass global audience. What role does technology play in helping you decide what content to make and how to make it and all that kind of stuff for a global audience and not a U.S. audience?
Well, I think, and if you look at the theatrical side of the business, they've been doing this for years now in terms of day and date releases around the globe. And if you have a tent pole title, you know, it's something that they've become very good at. In terms of technology's involvement in that process, and this is where you have to scale back into the production cycle and look at earlier cuts of product so that you can initiate all of that local work that needs to happen around the globe. I think in terms of where technology fits into that piece there, you could not do that if you had like a manually driven supply chain and shipping things around and tapes and all of that. I think security becomes a big piece of that whole layer there, and the fact that you have premium intellectual property that you need to secure. Fox is very good at this, and it's one of our key priorities in protecting our content. But it's definitely something that we look at from a theatrical side and taking that same model that from a television side and doing the same thing with accelerated day-and-date releases. It's not something that TV productions are normally used to, but we have better partnerships internally to make this happen. That how do we get the earlier cut with the trust knowing that, you know, we've got the full security and protection around that content, we can deliver it in a secure way. Someone can initiate all of their translations and initiate their recordings. And there may be some versioning that needs to happen between the initial cut versus the final cut of the product to make sure that you have the final dialogue. But I don't think we could do this without, you know, technology. And in fact, I think the technology will continue to improve to make that much more of a completely aligned process in terms of electronic translations that might occur in a market and feeding that content back through an inline system so that we can marry that up with the final picture.
I was just going to say that that's, you know, some of the stuff that we're doing in the cognitive services spaces now with facial recognition, language recognition. We do automated translation into, I believe, 18 languages, including simplified Chinese. So you can take your audio and then create your subtitling and then your somewhat of your localization based on these automated translations to cut down your timelines.
But I'm sorry, just commenting on that. That's one of the things, looking at the fact that we've got, you know, 100-year-old plus industry here, and we feel very strongly about the way that we approach localization and translation, that it is absolutely a creative talent. And it needs to happen in the marketplace, and it needs to happen with, you know, local speakers and otherwise, you know, that will affect the integrity of the product that we're trying to release.
So a few comments on the speaking from the theatrical side. There are many times where marketing chooses not to go day and date, and that becomes very interesting for us because on the content protection side, we don't sleep when they stagger like that. But there's financial models that suggest the return is greater. When I was with Marvel, we would notoriously release internationally up to 2 weeks before domestic. So delivery mechanisms that allow us to hold content till the very last minute and let it go were very helpful. That's technology. Your mechanism for viewing that content in theaters is just all controlled by keys that are, you know, specific to a projector, a day, and a time. So it's very important. It always goes together. On the localization and the automatic translation, very interesting technology, but to your point, you will find that every territory has a different name or slightly different name for key characters, and translators would miss that. So you have all these nuances that come into place, again, because you were asking how does it change territory to territory, and we start different cuts of those release of those major releases based on territory. China will get a censored version, they'll give notes. Russia will look at something, they'll give notes. So it can vary territory to territory, not dramatically, but it's not uncommon for some items to be different, you know?
Yeah, and just to add to that from just a television perspective, I think the two things I'd say from experience is, one, as much as we'll keep talking about dubbing and subtitling, I do find in the practical real world, they're actually turning into other cuts. To exactly your point, it doesn't have to be a lot, but as soon as you get in there and you're pulling out your nonlinear editor and you're starting to like actually take out a second or whatnot, you're cutting the picture and now it's different, right? So you're going to reconform all of that. So that's one thing that just in the supply chain. So those tools that help us with
and
that.
That's a major challenge for the industry when we start dealing with local, you know, partners, and then we deal with global partners that are distributing content based on one video source.
Yeah,
you know, so. Separate topic altogether, perhaps.
Absolutely, absolutely. The other thing I would just add to that is, so that I think that's one problem. I think you also have the kind of the general problem on the speed side is getting those into those workflows that we kind of had talked about. So I think that's another one.
We got a question over here.
Hi. Yeah, I was interested. The idea of talent and the involvement in technology has come up a couple of times in the panel. I was interested to hear your thoughts on, you know, in a time where the stars of the pictures and the TV shows will earn millions and millions of dollars for their involvement. Do you think that there's a kind of contrast with the investment that Hollywood is making in talent internally in terms of software and application development? And do you think it seems to be like there's a sea change going on right now where some of the more progressive strategic leaders are seeing developing applications and developing technology internally can become a competitive advantage and are starting to actually invest in software development internally after years of kind of offshoring. What are your thoughts on that?
So this is the question is that looking at the competitive advantage of technology within different media and entertainment companies, is that the question? Or something like that? Also, the technologist as the talent?
Yeah, internal.
I'll just take a quick crack.
Crack away.
Very much focused on what makes us better. Our creatives are very aware of where their pain points are. We're very locked in to what they'd like to see different, and that's where we spend our time and resources. So yes, on the application side and on the infrastructure side, I know. Our Microsoft friends would like everything in the cloud, but there are some things, take for instance review systems, it sounds like a simple thing, but it's not when you're playing back EXR files that are 8K resolution, and you know I can just go on with the specs from there. So we invest very heavily in what makes us better. Anything that doesn't, we are very much trying to take those commodity needs, if you will, and partner with our cloud providers and push those up. That's yesterday's approach. We understand that. Again, I've already conceded we're late with our framework and getting to the cloud. And we look forward to being at a place where we can do what the rest of the world's doing and say, okay, we're in the cloud. We've got this new idea, this new application, or this new way of engineering a set of systems. Let's test it out. And in the cloud, it's amazing because we can, with minimal investment, test out ideas and fail fast and very cheaply, and again, add continued value to the creative process and solving these problems. So very much we do.
And just to add on to that one quick point, I think it's really about the enablement, not necessarily, you know, it's sort of democratization of it. You're allowing people to do whatever they need to do in a manner that makes sense to them. So the cloud essentially enables that, and as you said, you fail fast and then move on.
Yeah, and you hit on offshore versus in-house. In order to pull this off, we really strongly believed, and I'm speaking from past places that I worked at, but also customers that I'm servicing currently, it's requirements and workflows that unless you're embedded on the ground, I don't think you can master and solve. So we're big believers in people being on-site, not offshore for these.
And just if I can add very quickly, it's in terms of, you know, Fox, it's the whole package. And the fact of the matter is, you know, it's the way that we operate as a complete team. We want to be best in class in terms of working with talent, in distributing our product, and getting it into the marketplace. Whether that's done with homegrown systems or offshore, I think is irrelevant. It's just a matter of having that entire approach that you're going to, you know, be in partnership of doing the best thing and distributing the best content to the marketplace.
What are your questions for the next network break? And I just want you to join me in applauding the great panel.
Yes. Thank you, Devendra. Thank you, gentlemen. Great way to start out the day. Fantastic.